talking to me?
Funny, like I'm a clown, I ain't usual.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead, make my day.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
We are Movie Geeks. Welcome to We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast. My name is Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And today is July 13th. It's been a pretty exciting weekend at the box office, apparently. Those little minions are running amok over all the competition. Michelle, what happened at the box office over the weekend?
Like you said, the minions. Yeah, it was all about the minions. They were number one with $115.2 million. Then, like I said, these are still box office estimates. Yeah. Number two was Jurassic World with $18.1 million. Number three was Inside Out from Disney, $17.1 million. Mm-hmm. Terminator Genesis from Paramount Pictures, $13.7 million. And The Gallows did a respectable, for a horror movie, did a respectable $10 million.
It's probably about what it cost, I would guess.
About a tripled budget. It's budget right there, I think, yeah. Isn't it?
Going back to Minions, yeah. Universal's Minions has made $239.5 million in 57 countries for a whopping $395.7 million to date.
Why do you think it made so much more than Inside Out did its opening weekend? It made $25 million more.
Well, a lot of people have seen Inside Out already, so I think everybody was ready for Minions. It had good word of mouth.
Yeah.
And
it was a familiar property, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a prequel. People know the characters, and you know, they're marketed to death. Yeah, I got something from Amazon, and it was in a Minion box the other day, and I was like, oh, please.
Exactly. However, Focus Features Selfless tanked. $5.4 million.
We tore that a new one last
exactly.
week.
Exactly.
Deserved.
Selfless.
Oh. Amy's doing really well. It, you know, had more theater openings. It was number 12
on
the list with $1.8
million.
Yeah. So it's doing really well.
That's good for a doc there about an artist that's been gone. I think she's been gone close to 4 or 5 years now. And that's pretty good numbers. Yeah.
Also, Fox's Paper Towns is coming up pretty soon, but it did open in Brazil and it had a strong $2.4 million ahead of its North American release later this week.
This is from the author of The Fault in Our Stars.
Exactly.
I hope for better things then. So I hope it'll be better than his previous. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, we all saw Minions.
Kevin felt pride. He was going to be the one to find his tribe the biggest, baddest villain to serve. Stuart felt hungry, mostly. He was going to be the one to eat this banana. And Bob was frightened of the journey ahead.
I reviewed it. I gave it 3 out of 5. Michelle, what'd you think of Minions?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was adorable. The best part of it was the music, the tying of the score with all the 60s London, The Who, The Beatles.
You think little kids are really going to pick up on those references, though?
Well,
or does it matter?
I don't think it matters. Yeah. I think it's just one of those. I think it'll have a strong box office next weekend as well.
I thought it was funny. You know, we all saw it together, and I the audience was chuckling throughout, but there wasn't any huge laughter coming.
Yeah.
I think there's a sort of a diminishing returns when it comes to the Minions. They're cute and they're funny, go ahead.
I was going to say, in your review, you call them slapstick gold, and I maybe call it some slapstick zirconium.
Yeah.
I think Curly Howard is slapstick gold, and then slapstick platinum being Chaplin, Keaton, and Lloyd.
Yeah.
But these guys are a little farther down, I think.
I also said in my review, I think they work, but the Minions work better when they're on the sort of the periphery of the story instead of front and center.
Exactly.
They need a good villain to work off of, and Sandra Bullock, frankly, I thought was kind of weak.
Yeah, you know, she just kind of, you know, screamed about wanting to get the crown jewels, and that's about it. Had weird dresses that turned into weapons.
And John Hamm, I didn't get him at all.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they even give this villainess a husband?
Time to pay the piper, and the piper is...
Especially if he's not remotely funny.
That was an odd choice.
Well, it's a chance for more stunt voice casting,
right.
Which is something that that DreamWorks is overindulging over the years, and something that Pixar luckily stays away from.
Mm-hmm.
And they just want to get the hot actor or the hot singer or something to do a voice in it. I think that was maybe an example of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
another thing I pointed out in my review: there's a scene early where Michael Keaton and Allison Janney play the parents, and they have a couple of kids.
They were funnier
than Sandra Bullock and John Hamm, that's for sure.
All aboard the Nelson Express!
Let's do this!
I said in my review, I wish they had been the central villains. You know, they're just this kind of wacky all-American family. But then it turns out they're bank robbers, and they're stopping along the road on this sort of cross-country crime spree, and they've got the minions along with them. But then they sort of abandon those characters, and they start focusing in on Sandra Bullock and John Hammond. It becomes much less interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of had my fill of the minions with the last Despicable Me. You know, I think they could work in shorts, like 7 or 8 minute shorts, but here stretched out, it just got kind of monotonous, and it's like, oh, let's do another famous song in this little jabbering sped up baby voices, and I just, it got tiresome to me after all. Even more tiresome than the Chipmunks, if that's possible.
It's which funnier. Are coming out the end of the year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The minions are funnier than Chipmunks, Jim. I've had to suffer through all those Chipmunks
movies.
That's
true, but the Chipmunks have been around like 60 years.
Well, the Minions will be around 60 more years, probably.
Yeah, I am very doubtful. Yeah. We'll see.
All right. The other movie we all saw last week, which Gallows came in, what, fourth?
Gallows came in fifth.
Fifth.
Yeah, I mean, for a small budget horror movie, that's pretty good.
Well, it ain't going to be there this week, and that's probably for sure.
I think you meant to say a small budget lame horror movie.
Mm-hmm. It's Charlie.
He's real.
None of us liked Gallows at all. I had a lot of problems with it. It was a PG-13 horror film, so it was completely bloodless.
Actually, it was rated R. It was rated R. According to Warner Brothers and the production notes, it was rated R.
Really?
We'll have to look into that, because there wasn't a drop of blood. There was no nudity. I don't even remember any foul language, so I don't know why it would have been rated R.
Maybe one F-bomb or something like that.
Maybe.
The poster was rated R.
Huh. Well, it wasn't scary. It wasn't bloody, like I said. It's about this play that happened 22 years ago called The Gallows that this high school put on, and some kid in the play accidentally got hung and died. So 22 years later, for some reason, the high school decided to put on the play again. Why on earth the high school would redo that play?
There would at least be protests outside or something. What high school in their right mind?
Yeah.
You know, that would definitely keep that Disney Won't Show Song of the South.
Right. And
we'd
love to see that released on Blu-ray or DVD.
Well, that's true. But I mean, you know, that's just got some things that might be a little offensive. Here, a kid got killed, and let's put on the play again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really?
And the body count was low. I mean, these three kids break into the high school. To like, what were they going to do? Damage the set? Why were they so mean? And then the first half of the movie is told through the eyes of the meanest jerk.
Oh,
I mean, in this other woman who was played by Kathy Lee Gifford's daughter, they reminded me of John Travolta and Nancy Allen in Carrie, where they decided to just go ruin the prom for everybody just out of a sense of cruelty.
Oh, yeah, this guy was such a jerk. You're actually rooting for him. It's like, when does he get off, for goodness sakes?
Yeah, and of course he does.
Oh, well, thank heaven. Not soon enough, in my opinion.
Camera work was a disaster. It was all handheld found footage, and it was sort of made me a bit nauseous.
At least they stuck with it. A lot of these things are going to give up on it about halfway through, but they stuck it out. And boy, past the quinine or something to relieve the dizziness.
It was lame.
Yeah, I'll be lucky if it's in the top 10 next week, you know.
Yeah, it was rated R for some disturbing, violent content and terror.
Wow, that surprised me.
I think
I've seen worse on television.
Oh,
easily.
The slowest episode of The Walking Dead is more horrific than this, you know.
Yeah, so we did not care for Gallows. But, we got to take the bad with the good. What else did we see last week? Jim and I saw Testament of Youth, which I think is opening in limited release.
There's a call for volunteers. It's as close to him as I can get. I need to be there.
Yeah, it's in a couple of theaters here in town, I know.
And Jim, you reviewed it.
Yeah, it just never grabbed me. It felt like I'd seen a lot of this stuff before. It basically starts about 100 years ago, right before the beginning of World War I. Alicia Vikander? Who's slowly becoming quite a popular actress. She's kind of a hot rising star, I guess. She was Ex Machina.
That's right.
If you recall that. And she's coming up in The Man from U.N.C.L.E. Mm-hmm. But she plays a young woman, and she's got a younger brother who's in Oxford, and she wants to go to Oxford, but her father, who's played by Dominic West, and mother played by Emily Watson, thinks it's a complete waste of time. They want her to practice piano
and find a husband
and she's not interested in that until she meets one of the classmates of her brother, who's played by sort of the it guy right now from Game of Thrones, Kit Harington, who plays a character called Jon Snow on there or something. Mm-hmm. He's a heartthrob, the resident heartthrob on that show. He's a poet, and they kind of get involved and they exchange letters, and she's swooning as she's caressing the letters in one scene. Mm-hmm. And then the darn pesky war breaks out, and it's gonna split them apart. She luckily does get accepted to Oxford. Is sort of taken under the wing by a sympathetic teacher played by Miranda Richardson. It's nice to see her again, but it's kind of a nothing role for her. She's in like three or four scenes, and she has one nice bit of dialogue with Alicia's character, Vera Brittain. This is based on a true story, by the way.
It's based on her memoirs.
Her memoirs.
Best-selling memoirs.
And when war breaks out, she decides to sort of be closer to her brother and her new love, Roland, that she will become a nurse. So we then kind of go into a MASH mode and get lots of scenes of mud and blood and lots of people being carried in on stretchers and all that. And that's when they finally bring in Hayley Atwell in the last half hour or so of the film. And she just doesn't have a whole lot to do either.
That's a supporting part.
And, you know, if you've seen a version of Farewell to Arms, you've probably, seen most of this story there. And I could never get involved with the characters. I don't think there's any real heat between the Roland and Vera characters. I just didn't do much for me.
I disagree. I like the film. It was an old-fashioned, very sincere sort of women's picture. I mean, it was, World War I told through the eyes of this woman, so there was nothing about, war strategy or anything like that. The war just sort of existed as a device for her to lose loved ones. There's been movies like that for decades, and I think people who go to something like that, especially women, are going to enjoy it, and they're going to cry. And
is it more for the Downton Abbey crowd? Maybe Merchant Ivory crowd of a couple decades ago?
Oh, sure.
But Alicia Vikander is terrific, and you mentioned she was an Ex Machina. She is an exciting actress, and she's shown great range this year. She goes through all the emotions and The Testament of Youth, and then compare that to her performance in Ex Machina, where she was this humanoid robot and really, really good at that. And I think that's a really tough role to pull off. A lesser actress could have really just made that whole robot thing ridiculous. So you said she's in this new Man from U.N.C.L.E., which comes out next month. So she's an exciting actress. I'm looking forward to seeing her in other films.
Yeah. It just didn't grab me. I just felt I'd seen the story before. Yeah. It's got some nice scenery in there. It's got some nice costumes, but nothing really drew me in. It seemed like.
Well, it's definitely square and old fashioned.
Yeah, a little slow.
Deliberately paced.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. But
I didn't get the romance between them. It just kind of sputtered to me. I don't think they were a good match.
You gave it, what did you give it, 3 out of 5?
Yeah, I think so.
Given it 4 out of 5. It wasn't a perfect film, but for what it was, I think it worked. We saw it at the High Point. I was back at the High Point midnight Friday night after I saw Testament of Youth and went down to the Tivoli and introduced a midnight show there. I ran back to see Angst.
How is that?
Oh, boy. It's not something you want to take your mom to.
Is it in German or something?
It's in German. It's an Austrian serial killer movie from 1983. Andy over at Destroy the Brain shows, of course, Late Night Grindhouse the first weekend of every month, and he picks a sort of a more well-known slasher film from the 70s or 80s. He went with this movie called Angst, which had never been released in the United States. And it will be released on Blu-ray here in a couple of months. Apparently, filmmaker Gaspar Noé, who did Irreversible and Beyond the Void, and has sort of discovered this and is sort of behind the push to get this thing released in this country. It is based on a true story about this guy who gets out of prison, and then he goes on a killing spree, and then he gets caught. There's not much to the story at all. The body count is not very high. He breaks into a house and kills 3 family members. There's one scene that's incredibly rough, and it lasts about 5 minutes, and I think that's what the whole movie has its sort of notorious reputation built around. I don't want to go into too many details, but it deals with murder and rape in that order. And that scene is pretty disturbing and hard to watch.
What was the reaction for the midnight crowd?
Well, I would say Andy didn't quite get the crowd he usually does. Usually he's in the 75, 85-person crowd, and I think people are sort of prepared for this one, so maybe only 45, 50 people showed up. I think women may have been turned off by some of the promotion.
That you know, people had said, you know, oh, your films are getting kind of, you know,
too safe or something.
Exactly. And so he went with the edge.
Yeah, I didn't hear anybody screaming. I didn't hear anybody get up and walk away. But, you know, that crowd, they sort of really enjoy the gore. There was some interesting things going on with the camera work. It looked like it was shot digitally, just by the way the camera was swooping around. But it couldn't have been in 1983 in Austria. And then there's this central performance by this crazy, snaggle-tooth madman. He was great. I don't know his name. He kind of reminded me of what Klaus Kinski was doing back in the 70s and 80s, you know, rolling his eyes. But it worked. It totally worked. So I do recommend Angst. I'm glad I saw it. Next month, Andy has picked Street Trash.
Okay.
From 1987.
Drop out and join the ranks of the few. The filthy. The trash.
Vintage Vinyl, the record store over on Del Mar, used to be the Varsity Theater.
Yeah.
And that was, Street Trash was the last movie I saw at the Varsity Theater, and it may have been the last movie that played at the Varsity.
There's no named stars in it. I was thinking that was maybe a Linda Blair thing, but it's
No, James Lovitz, who was Dr. Frankenstein and Frankenhooker, he stars in it. The guy who directed it, I can't think of his name, but he was one of the developers of the Steadicam, and he's made a fortune selling his Steadicam technology to studios and has never went back and directed another film. And really sort of worked his steady cam on this movie, Street Trash. But it's a fun movie. It's kind of a comedy about these winos, and they find this hooch. It's supposed to be like Mad Dog. I think it's called Viper. And when they drink it, their stomachs explode, and there's guts all over the place. And then there's these gangsters that are dealing in this illegal Viper hoot. So that's something to look forward to next month.
Probably lots of nice 80s fashions, I'm sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a colorful movie, and I know he's showing a 35mm print, which is exciting.
If I ever write a story myself, it will be to correct the myriad misconceptions created by his imaginative license.
Murder, Mr. Calmont. Murder.
That was a clip from Mr. Holmes, starring Ian McKellen. That opens this Friday. Jim, you're pretty excited about this movie. You got to see it already. Neither Michelle or I have. Tell us about Mr. Holmes.
Well, you know, I've been a Sherlock Holmes fan for as long as I can remember, and I was certainly a huge fan of the first time Sir Ian McKellen teamed up with Bill Condon. It was maybe in, 2005 or 2006 or something, with maybe earlier than that.
I think it was earlier than that, yeah.
Yeah, on Gods and Monsters, which should have gotten more Oscars. I think Condon won an Oscar for the screenplay for that, which was a terrific film where Ian played James Whale. But in this one, he plays a fictional character, but they're treating him as a real-life character. He is playing Sherlock Holmes, the great detective, and they're taking a somewhat more realistic view of it. In one scene, Holmes actually goes to a movie that's produced from one of John Watson's.
They show that in the trailer. Is that a Basil Rathbone movie?
Well, I think it's supposed to be. Yeah. My only problem with the film is that footage that they shot in black and white, and they sort of did heightened close-ups of all the actors, but the soundtrack is not like a sweeping type of thing that, you know, Mikkels Rosa or something type score that, or Franz Waxman type of score that they would have in the 30s when he was watching this. But most of the film takes place in 1947 after the war, and Sherlock is a still somewhat spry 93. Mm. In the Holmes stories, I think when Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was asked what Holmes was doing at the end of them, he said, well, he retired and he's keeping bees. And that's precisely what he's doing. He's got a small cottage off the coast there in rural England. And Laura Linney plays his Irish housekeeper. And she's got an 8 or 9 year old son who sort of becomes a fan of Mr. Holmes. And they end up helping keep the bees. And he reads a story that Holmes is trying to write. He decides that since John Watson got so much wrong, that he's got to write his own version of his last case.
And so there is a mystery.
Yeah, there's a case that goes back about 35 years where that he investigated solo. It's sort of the case that sort of pushed him into retirement. It's kind of an interesting mystery. And also, they also flash back to just a few months before the events in the film when Sherlock Holmes goes to Japan in search of, I think it was called prickly ash, which was a sort of plant that if you ground up and, you know, turned into a liquid would help with the memory. And that's Holmes's main concern. He's not as concerned with his physical wind down is the fact that his mind is not as sharp as it once was. And he's having to resort to actually writing people's names on his on his shirt collar.
Well, he's 94.
Yes, yes. So he's wanting to hold on to that as long as possible. I think they show in the trailer, what's funny is when he does visit this gentleman in Japan, this fellow's mother is kind of disappointed to meet him. And she says, "Where's your hat?" And he says, "Well, you know, the illustrator created that for those stories. I, you know, prefer a top hat." Mm-hmm. And she says, "Well, where's your big pipe?" Well, I prefer cigars, actually. Yeah. That was something.
So you really like the film.
It's terrific.
How
it's
is Ian McKellen? Ian McKellen. Does he pull off a 94-year-old effectively?
I tell you, if there are five better lead actor performances by the end of the year, I will be shocked. This, I think, has to merit a Best Actor nomination.
There's lots of Oscar buzz for it already. Oh, and it's already shown and screened at a few film festivals previously, so the awards buzz is already there.
Oh, it brings sort of a new shading to the Holmes character that we've seen before. In previous incarnations, he's been kind of socially awkward. Mm-hmm. And without giving anything away, there's a scene in which the young boy that has befriended Sherlock sort of tells off his mother, and he's horrified at it. Mm-hmm. And he says, "Go apologize right now. What are you doing?" And I was like, this is something that you wouldn't have seen the Holmes of Hound of the Baskervilles or something like that. Mm-hmm. So he's starting to learn to really care about people. Mm-hmm. There's no John Watson in it. You kind of see the back of him in some scenes.
Oh,
or Mrs. Hudson is not there. Mycroft does make an appearance. He figures into the plot.
Who else is in the film? You mentioned Laura Linney.
Laura Linney and Ian McKellen. And there's a couple of actors I'm not really familiar with. I'll have to look up the name of the actress that's pivotal to his last case. Mm-hmm. She's very good at it. She's kind of a haunted, sort of cursed character. Yeah, it's terrific. The costuming, the sets are just superb. Mm-hmm. And there's even one scene in which in search of this plant in Japan, mm-hmm. Holmes is wandering around the ruins of Hiroshima.
Mm-hmm.
And it's odd to see him. And I know that the Basil Rathbone series, a lot of those were set in World War II, but to see him in such a desolate historic place like that is very, very interesting. And Conda does a terrific job directing it. It zips right by there. It doesn't feel like, I think it's 105 minutes or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's very well done. I think it's a terrific Holmes film.
Good. So that's Mr. Holmes. It opens Friday. Jim has seen it. I will plan on seeing it probably this weekend. It looks really great. I can't wait to see it. A couple other movies that open this weekend here in St. Louis, at least. The Jim has seen. Tell us about this documentary, Cartel Land.
There's an imaginary line out there between right and wrong, good and evil. I believe what I am doing is good, and what I'm standing up against is evil. It's the cartels. They're the ones terrorizing their own country, and now they're starting to do it over here.
It's an interesting documentary. It's sort of told from two perspectives. It sort of focuses on the battle against the Mexican drug cartels that are pushing their drugs into the United States, and in one part of the story is about a fellow that used to be a construction worker who lives in Arizona, too far from the authorities to really make much of an impact, so he decides to sort of start a vigilante group, a militia group, and sort of patrol the border and take down these guys, these wearing fatigues and all that. The other part of the film, which might be even more compelling, is set about 1,000 miles from there in a village where a doctor, I think Dr. Morales or Morala, who has started a defense group, and he's going from village to village, kind of like the Magnificent Seven or something, to inspire the villagers to push out the drug cartels. Mm. He's an interesting character, and at one point, the fellow in Arizona reads about the fellow down in Mexico, and he says, "Good for him. I wish him luck." So it's executive produced by Catherine Bigelow. She's one of the people involved with this. It's a really interesting educated, learn a lot from it. A lot of stuff you've read in the news, mm-hmm. but you know, you might not have a good grasp of what exactly is going on. There's a heartbreaking scene at the start of it at the funeral where the drug cartel in Mexico just went in and slaughtered a bunch of workers mm-hmm. at a lime factory because they weren't paying them protection. And you know, they're burying babies and grandpas and all that. It'll just destroy us. So you're rooting for these people down there to get these the slime out of there. And it's a pretty great documentary.
Okay. Do you see it being one of the five Academy Awardtime? Could it possibly?
I think it's a good possibility. I think mm-hmm. that and Amy are good possibilities for that.
Yeah. So that's Cartel Land. Look for our review at wearemoviegeeks.com. Although I think Travis is reviewing that.
Travis's review.
Another movie that opens this Friday that only Jim has seen is Aloft.
What he didn't realize was that he'd been crossing a frozen sea. The ice broke. And he fell. Frozen as he was, he let go.
That's Jennifer Connelly?
Jennifer Connelly as the main role. Cillian Murphy?
Cillian Murphy.
Right,
yeah.
The Irish actor. The Scarecrow from the Christopher Nolan Batman film.
28 Days Later.
Yeah, 28 Days Later. He's in it there. It starts out in the past, maybe 25, 30 years ago with...
Isn't there a hawk involved?
Oh, yes. It's kind of pretentious there. There's this
Sony
whole thing.
Classic.
Yeah. They're kind of known for that. Connelly is all set in Canada, so everything, it's all... You know, looks like it's in the dead of winter. It's depressing looking. She's bringing her two kids to sort of a miracle healer. One of the younger kid is sick. The other kid, the older kid who grows up to be Cillian Murphy, has to bring his hawk with him. And of course, when he lets the hawk go for a flight, it disrupts things and they get shooed away. Then it goes to the current day and a reporter played by Melanie Laurent. I believe you pronounce her name. Lovely actress from Inglourious Basterds.
An Enemy.
Yeah, the Avenging Angel from that Now You See Me, Now You Don't. Mm-hmm. She was in that.
Yeah.
She plays a reporter that contacts the grown son, Cillian Murphy, now, about his mother. That his mother has sort of disappeared in the Arctic, and she has footage of him, and she wants to ask him about her, and he doesn't want anything to do with her, and then he finally changes his mind, and they all decide to go to the Arctic to find her because it turns out she is now a celebrated healer. And it's a lot of them trudging through the snow. There's an extended scene of them walking on the ice that keeps on flashing back to 25 years previous. When, you know, Connelly is a single mother, gets estranged from the kids. There's a horrible tragedy.
Sounds like you didn't like it all that much, though.
Oh, my gosh. I felt like I was sludging through that ice and snow by the end of it. It's a rough
one. Is it a long film?
It felt like it. It's definitely all of 2 hours, that's for certain.
I see. So Aloft does not stay Aloft Jim's opinion.
It crashes to the ground.
All right, but some other people might like it.
Yeah, if you're a fan of Jennifer Connelly, you might like it. And the old age makeup they have on her, I will say this, is very good, very subtle.
Better than Beautiful Mind's old age makeup?
Oh, yeah, better than Armie Hammer and J. Edgar. Closer to Leo and J. Edgar than Armie Hammer, so that's good.
Yeah, so that's Aloft. Mm-hmm. Another movie that opens Friday that nobody in this room has seen is Ant-Man. You guys are all going to go tomorrow night.
Imagine a soldier size of an insect. The ultimate secret weapon.
I think the advance buzz on Ant-Man is pretty good. Edgar Wright directed Ant-Man, is that right?
Well, no, he was supposed to.
Oh, he was supposed to.
Yeah, Peyton Reed ended up taking over with. So this is kind of a test for Marvel. With last year, the test was Guardians of the Galaxy because these were characters that most of the general public weren't familiar with. Ant-Man is one of the foundation characters from Marvel. He was one of the founders of the original Avengers in the comic books.
Who's Peyton Reed again? Remind
Peyton
me.
Reed did Bring It On, the film. I think the first of those films.
Okay. Wow.
And he's done mostly rom-com type of things. So this is going to be the first Marvel film that had sort of a bit of turmoil behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So let's see if they can pull that off.
Okay. But the early buzz is great.
Yeah.
The early buzz, some people are saying it's become their favorite Marvel movie.
Well, good.
Yeah.
Well, that opens Friday. We'll have reviews of that next week because we'll all have seen it by then. And another movie that opens Friday, which I will be reviewing, is Trainwreck.
Can't wait.
Starring Amy Schumer.
What am I doing? I slept at the doctor's place last night.
My boy got intimate.
Yes.
Sexual intercourse.
Oh!
You never spend the night. What were you, blackout drunk?
No, I had like 2 drinks. 3 max. 4 now that I'm tallying.
Because you're on antibiotics or something?
But I have not seen Trainwreck. Jim has seen Trainwreck. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it more in more detail next week. But Jim, give us, your basic view of Trainwreck.
Well, it's got a lot of heart, but it's very raunchy. If you're a fan of Amy's show on Comedy Central, you'll be very happy. She's utilizing a lot of her friends from that show, stand-up comics, people from SNL. The thing I kept on thinking about is a movie from 1981 that sort of ushered in a new star, and that was The Jerk, because up till that point we knew Steve Martin from mm-hmm. doing stand-up and TV, and now he's a movie star, so now I think we can say that Amy Schumer is a movie star.
Well, Judd Apatow does that. I don't think anyone really knew who Steve Carell was before The 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Or Melissa McCarthy before Bridesmaids.
Or Knocked Up.
Oh, Seth Rogen,
Seth Rogen. I remember seeing his face on these posters saying, who is this guy, and why is he starring in a movie?
But she, like I say, it is for adults. It's mm-hmm. definitely earns it our it's our rating. That's for certain.
Well, the show's pretty raunchy. The Comedy Central show you mentioned.
Go back and watch it.
Oh yeah, but the show is smart. It's got some great satirical sketches that really hit home, and they're really tough. But not only that, people think, oh, it's got a feminist slant, but she hits herself pretty good in them, and that's what she does with her character in this film. There's a terrific performance by a great actress named Brie Larson as her sister in it. And it's great to see Bill Hader playing more of an average guy. He's having a great summer with this and Inside Out.
We will talk more at length and review Trainwreck next week and when we have all seen it. St. Louis Filmmaker Showcase starts Sunday. I've often said that St. Louis has a wealth of talent. There are a lot of very talented filmmakers and directors and writers here in St. Louis, and St. Louis is fortunate enough to have Cinema St. Louis in our midst. Cinema St. Louis is a nonprofit cinema-related event planning group, and this is, I think, their 8th or 9th or 10th year where they've done this St. Louis Filmmaker Showcase where local filmmakers can submit their shorts and their features. The Cinema St. Louis guys choose which ones are going to show, and they show them at the Tivoli. They've got several shorts programs and I guess 6 or 7 features as well. I've seen almost all of the documentaries, and Jim has seen the narratives. We really can't offer our opinions at this point because we are on the judging committees. I'm on the documentary judging committee. Jim is on the narrative. We don't want to tip our hand as to what we are favoring at this point. But, Jim, tell me about a few of the more interesting narrative shorts or features you have seen so far.
Okay. Well, I would say of the features, I'm kind of leaning more towards Sleep With Me. It's got a nice performance by a professional actor named
Raymond Barry. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's very good.
He was in Walk Hard.
Oh,
remember,
yeah.
He was the dad. And yeah, I always recite his great line, "The wrong kid died."
But yeah, he's very good in this.
He's been around for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. As far as the shorts, I really enjoyed Wyatt Weed's short Trinity, which is sort of a what if, and what if we were a fly on the wall when Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and Harrison Ford got together in a little diner out of the way somewhere in the Los Angeles area, and they discussed that Lucas selling Star Wars or selling his company to Disney, and about whether or not they do another one. And it's very entertaining, and Wyatt himself plays Harrison Ford, and he does a very good job with it. I also liked a film called The Last Job, which was all shot here in St. Louis, mostly in pantomime. There's no real dialogue in it, and it's about an assassin, and you guessed it, it's his last job, and he gets an assignment, and it makes terrific use of locations around the Fox Theater. There's a terrific shot inside the ballroom of Union Station before the big overhaul, which is kind of interesting. So that's a pretty good flick too. So that's one to try to catch.
Yeah.
I think
I've been watching the documentaries. There were so many Ferguson documentaries submitted that they have to have their own Ferguson night. So I've had to sit through these Ferguson documentaries. There's, seven or eight of them. But more interesting were a couple of the other documentaries I saw. There's one called The Safe Side of the Fence about nuclear waste in Missouri and how it's polluting the ground. I knew there was this fire over in Bridgeton that's just been burning for years, and I've heard how dangerous it is, and I really didn't understand the origins of it, and I do now. Apparently Mallinckrodt was making nuclear energy back in the 1950s and 60s and 70s and just dumped everything behind. It's a pretty nasty look at what's going on environmentally in the St. Louis, surrounding St. Louis areas, including Weldon Springs, which was the basis for another documentary that I saw called Weldon Krieg. Weldon Springs is not only a hotbed of nuclear waste, it is where the largest World War II reenactment takes place every year in the country. Apparently, that's a big deal. You hear about Civil War reenactors, but World War II reenactors don't seem to get as much press. But there are guys who collect tanks and vehicles and weapons from World War II, and they all get together every year in Weldon Springs. And they some of them like to dress up as Nazis. Apparently, some of them prefer to be Nazis because they had mm-hmm. spiffier uniforms or something. And they reenact these battles, and they're so normal, these guys. They're just like, most of these guys are about my age or maybe a little older, and they have their day jobs, and that's their hobby on the weekends, and that's fine. It's a pretty good documentary.
Yeah, and I think those reenactors might have been used in one of the narrative films that I saw, yeah.
Well, there was a World War II movie shot called Rhineland. It was actually a World War II narrative epic by Chris Grega, written and directed by Chris Grega, and he's the one who made this documentary. So I think he met these reenactors. They worked on that film.
Okay.
But that was 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So that is the St. Louis Filmmakers Showcase. It starts this Sunday. You can go to cinemastlouis.org and find out all the details about that. And then we'll talk again next week about some of our favorites and some of the awards for that.
20 years in Gotham, how many good guys are left? How many stayed that way? He has the power to wipe out the entire human race. And we have to destroy him.
Okay, that was a clip from the brand new Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice trailer, which they showed at Comic-Con in San Diego over the weekend, and the crowd went nuts. I went nuts looking at my computer watching that. What'd you think of the new Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice trailer, Jim?
Well, it looks pretty interesting. What I find more sort of compelling is Ben Affleck as Batman. I know he was the source of a lot of internet controversy.
He looks great.
He looks terrific.
But he follows the comic. And
yeah. He's closer to the Frank Miller Dark Knight Returns Bruce Wayne. Mm-hmm. He's not quite that old yet, but it looks like they've put some gray on his temples, and it looks like he's been put through the ringer.
Mm-hmm.
There's some nice little snippets I caught in that. There's a sequence where he comes across. Is it one of his old suits, or is it one of
he comes? Robin? The Easter eggs in it were we saw a Robin suit. Everybody went crazy when they saw there was
So it's a flash where it's sort of a tip of the hat to the Death in the Family, the miniseries that killed Robin in the late '80s that they did, where you can call in or write in or something.
And you see Wonder Woman briefly.
Yes, yeah, you see her in action.
What's that actress's name?
The Gal Gadot.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm wondering if we saw a little bit of baby Aquaman, because there's a young boy, looks like he's chained to a rock underwater.
Exactly.
Or something.
Yep. And that was another Easter egg.
See a lot more of Jesse Eisenberg, but not the bald pate.
No.
Now there's one scene where it looks like he's gazing at lovingly at a big hunk of kryptonite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to me that seemed like the weak link of the trailer was Jesse Eisenberg, and he's playing Lex Luthor. Is that right?
Yeah
but
Luthor.
It looks like he's playing him via his Facebook performances. Zuckerberg.
I mean, why get such a weak actor? I mean, was Michael Cera busy or something? I mean, it seems just a strange casting to me.
At the end of the trailer, the red capes are coming.
Great. What's interesting is the previous trailer, you heard a lot of different voices, including Jeremy Irons, who you get to see in this
Finally.
As Alfred. But I also heard, and I thought I detected Holly Hunter. And see her. I think
show her at the very beginning.
I thought that when I first heard her voice in the previous trailer, I thought she was playing like a CNN commentator type of thing, kind of a takeoff on a certain CNN headline lawyer commentator. But
who does she play?
Well, it looks like she's playing a senator.
She's
or
playing
something.
A senator oh, okay. in it.
You know, who's sort of holding a hearing about Superman being an illegal alien, I think.
I still think it has an interesting opening March 25th, 2016.
Yeah.
So it's not a big, but Warner Brothers is trying to say this is actually the beginning of the summer.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, well, they tried to do that with Captain America Winter Soldier, which opened, I think, on April 4th. So they've kind of bumped that up a week or two. But yeah, I see a little bit of Amy Adams in this also, and Lawrence Fishburne. So they're back from the first Man of Steel. And from what I hear, it is going to sort of address the events of Man of Steel. Many of us had so many problems with the huge, nonstop, never-ending destruction of Metropolis from that first film.
I think that's what
sort of
inspires Batman.
Yeah, yeah. They destroyed the Wayne Foundation building in Metropolis. I guess everything went okay in Gotham City. I guess they didn't see the brunt of the Krypton villains. Speaking of which, we actually see a brief glimpse being put into a body bag of Michael Shannon.
That's right.
As General Zod. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, opening March 25th. Something to look forward to. The other, one of the many other things they showed at Comic-Con over the weekend was a new sort of behind-the-scenes video about the Star Wars The Force Awakens, which opens December 18th of this year.
We are here on day one of Star Wars Episode 7.
You're here.
How incredible is that?
It wasn't a trailer, but it was all, it seemed to me that it was all about associating themselves with the 70s Star Wars movies in terms of practical effects, big on Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher and Mark Hamill. It seems like they're trying to distance themselves as far as possible from the Star Wars movies that were made between 10 and 15 years ago.
It was an interesting behind-the-scenes kind of video. So after they brought the cast out and Harrison Ford was there. Nobody expected Harrison Ford after, still recovering from the plane accident.
Yeah.
So it was great to see him. And then J.J. Abrams, who's directing it, surprised the fans and invited everyone to the surprise concert that they held afterwards. Gave everyone lightsabers. So, and John Williams made a surprise cameo appearance up on the big screen in Hall H. So it was a great Friday night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was pleased in that behind the scenes thing to see Simon Pegg, mm-hmm. and I felt happy for the guy because he looked like he was just unbelievably giddy at being there and being in a Star Wars movie. So
my whole life has led to this moment. I'm in heaven.
But good for him.
Yeah. Well, the worst thing about those the Star Wars movies, I guess, would be chapters 1, 2, and 3 are the special effects. And there was this sort of, I guess, state-of-the-art CGI at the time, but the special effects in those movies just hold up horribly. They look like just cartoons.
I will disagree, Tom. The worst thing about those films are the scripts.
Yeah, well, that's
They're
true.
Horrible midichlorians. Give me a break.
You can transcend a bad script. No, I take that back. You can't. But still, they're very smart to say, hey, look, we know those movies were bad. We're going to go back and do it right like George Lucas did 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah. I've got my faith in J.J. A lot of people, I've heard from some friends who were kind of apprehensive because they didn't like what he did with Star Trek. And I will say that his first Star Trek film was very entertaining. The second one has some script problems, but I'm very confident he's going to come through with this.
Yeah. And did anyone see the Deadpool trailer?
You may be wondering why the red suit. Well, that's so bad guys can't see me bleed. This guy's got the right idea. He wore the brown pants.
Daddy needs to express some rage.
Tried watching this morning. It looked like somebody sort of filmed it with their iPhone.
They have a lot of, we should see the first official one in 3 weeks.
I watched it. It looks very jokey. And it was apparently a Red Band trailer, so it was really Ryan Reynolds wearing what looks like a Spider-Man suit in the sort of out-of-focus trailer, putting people down and being sort of vulgar. And
a lot of the effects are not done. I mean, it's going to be a hard R, and so a lot of the effects were not finished yet. But Ryan Reynolds did go on Twitter last night and say, don't worry, we're going to have your first trailer in 3 weeks.
Now, is he the villain, though?
Deadpool? No, he's kind of an anti-hero. He's kind of
like the Punisher.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's what it looks like.
So this would be like the first maybe R-rated superhero flick since Watchmen, maybe, or the second Punisher.
The Punisher,
Punisher War War Room or something about that.
Which also had Dominic West. He was Jigsaw.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yeah.
But the fans in Hall H went crazy, and so they had to show it twice. They usually do not show trailers twice. But they did with this one. Comes out in February of next year.
X-Men Apocalypse. Did anyone see that trailer?
Yes.
You did?
Well, that one they showed, that was another thing where they just brought the panel out and discussed it. They haven't had, the only thing they released from it was the poster.
Fantastic Four, I guess they're promoting that pretty heavily there. That opens August 7th.
Yeah. I don't know if that were the, I guess the stars were there for that one.
Everyone showed up. Everyone showed up for the different panel discussions.
Well, I don't know about that one. We'll see.
Maze Runner, Scorch Trials, who cares? Is there a new Wolverine movie coming out?
Hugh Jackman, when they brought everybody from X-Men out, he was the first one out. And he said, this is it. My final.
So he's an X-Men Apocalypse.
Possibly. Well, he's a, yeah, yeah. He okay. didn't. They didn't. But they brought Stan Lee out for a huge group photo at the end. So they had. He was brought out by Channing Tatum, who's going to be in Gambit.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had everybody from X-Men. They had it. Yeah. There was
Deadpool.
A, and when we posted it, we posted it on our site. It's a great. It's on Twitter. It's on Facebook. It's all over the place. But the group photo of superheroes was
Okay. Remind me again who Gambit is, Superhero Boy.
Well, he's. I don't think he was a member of one of the X groups, but he is a mutant. Yes, and as I understand, he can use he can throw these playing cards and make them deadly and all that. And I guess he uses the luck and chance or something as as one of his mutant abilities. He can influence that.
So he was in them X-Men movies?
He was in X-Men or Wolverine Origins.
Oh, okay.
He was in the first Wolverine solo film, and he was played by Taylor Kitsch in it, as I recall.
It was great to see Stan Lee just surrounded by everybody, you know.
Well, just it's great to see Stan Lee, period, because he had to, I think he had to, but due to illness, had to beg off on a couple of premieres or a couple of appearances. So it's good to see he's in good health. He's close to, maybe is he 95 yet?
He's up there.
I'm glad to see he's able to still get around and attend these things. And you can't say that he's going to, if he when he does eventually pass, as we all will, that he's going to, you know, die in obscurity because it's going to be a big deal, and he knows that he's beloved, that's for sure.
Suicide Squad is a DC property.
Yes.
That's Warner Brothers.
They run a trailer for that or a teaser?
A teaser.
They're bad guys.
Exactly. And if anything goes wrong, we blame them. We have built-in deniability.
What makes you think you can control them?
Because getting people to act against their own self-interest is what I do for a living.
That won't open for more than another year.
That's August 2016.
That's one where Jared Leto plays Joker.
The Joker, and Margot Robbie is Harley Quinn, and Will Smith is Deadshot.
They were all at the Comic-Con panel as well. Warner Brothers also showed a new trailer for Man from U.N.C.L.E.
They will send an army to stop us.
We must give them an appropriate welcome.
Things could get a little messy.
End of the world. That kind of thing.
That looks really good.
Which is just in about 3 weeks, something like that.
That's in August, August 7th.
Yeah, Guy Ritchie, I'm a little apprehensive about, but we'll see. I wasn't that keen on his Sherlock Holmes films, but I know people that love them.
Guy Ritchie is directing another King Arthur movie, so he's working on that presently.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they have to be better than the one with Clive Owen, I think. And,
all right, The Hateful Eight. There was a cast appearance from The Hateful Eight and a 7-minute character featurette. The big news was that Ennio Morricone will be composing an original score for The Hateful Eight. That's pretty exciting.
His first Western score in 40 years. So he and Tarantino kept posting on Twitter, and The Hateful Eight Twitter feed was posting pictures of them all in the private jet. Bruce Stern, I mean, every actor, they all came together for it. He also, along with the 7-minute featurette, he also said these were the cameras that were used for Ben-Hur.
So yeah, that was they put that on the sides of those old Panavision cameras, don't they?
Of course, Morricone, you know, really made his mark with Westerns. He scored all the Sergio Leone Westerns in the 60s. My phone has a Ennio Morricone Western ringtone on it.
But didn't he and Quentin have a dust-up over Django and Chan?
Well, Tarantino has always used a lot of Morricone.
Like in Kill Bill and all that. He used to, you know, use a little sound bites.
Kill Bill and Django and Inglourious Basterds. All those films feature Ennio Morricone music from old films. I didn't hear this. You say Morricone got angry at Tarantino for doing
that's what I read somewhere.
There was a bit of a falling out. For them to come back together to do this highly anticipated film coming out in December, I mean, it's going to be released in 70mm.
Morricone... I don't know what the last film he scored was. I think he's been scoring films in Italy, but you know, he did The Untouchables, of course, and Cinema Paradiso, and
The Mission.
Just
great films.
Tons of greats. But he's got to be up there too. He's got to be up in his mid-80s, I would imagine.
Sure. Yeah.
By now, so that's super exciting. His first Western score in 40 years. Somebody wrote here.
Legendary Pictures also showed their panel. They came with some big, really big films. They came with the Warcraft trailer. They also came with a new Krampus poster.
Yeah.
And they also, their big thing was Guillermo del Toro's Crimson Peak.
Okay.
That cast was there as well. They also, Guillermo del Toro also had a trailer for Universal Pictures Studios and a compilation with Horror Nights. So if you go to the theme park, they're going to have a Crimson Peak attraction.
Now, is Pan from Legendary Pictures?
Pan is from Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they were there as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That opens next month, I think.
But the Warcraft trailer brought the house down. Huh. I mean, people said it was incredible. Melissa Holland was there covering Comic-Con for us.
Oh, yeah.
And she said it started... I mean, she said the trailer was amazing.
Who's in Warcraft or who directed her, do we know?
That is from Duncan Jones, who did Source Code and the Moon. Sci-Fi Moon.
Yeah. He is the son of David Bowie.
He is.
Oh, that's right.
So that went over really well.
I imagine it would with that crowd. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did anything not go over well at Comic-Con?
No. I mean, they every panel that would come, every studio, they one-upped each other every time.
Mm-hmm. So, Bill Murray made his first appearance at Comic-Con.
He did.
I'm sure Billy Mooney probably did not make his first appearance at Comic-Con.
No.
Rock the Casbah. I saw a trailer for that. It's got Bruce Willis.
I was a rock tour manager, and this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to tour with my act.
To Afghanistan?
We have that posted, yes.
Yeah, and Bill Murray goes to Afghanistan. And
looks funny.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, Jennifer Lawrence was happy to see him, that's for certain, yes.
I'm sure he was happy to see her.
Focus Feature, which is now Gramercy Pictures, they also showed and which we also posted on the site, the Red Band trailer for Sinister 2. Looks really scary.
Is Ethan Hawke back?
No. Yeah. As well, M. Night Shyamalan was there with Jason Blum from Blumhouse Pictures promoting The Visit, his upcoming movie.
What's The Visit? Isn't that the one where the grandma tries to put the kid in the oven or something?
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the premise of that? Does anyone know?
Not a clue. Yeah.
The single mom has the two kids. Here, go and visit grandma and grandpa for the weekend. And they say, don't come out of your room past 9:30. And when they do peek out of the room, as the trailer is showing, things are not all well at grandma and grandpa's house in the country.
Would you mind getting inside the oven to clean it?
Stop! That's what you get for not listening to mom.
That's right.
That's Comic-Con. That's exciting. Is Comic-Con over now?
Yeah.
It finished up.
Another movie news. Let's see. Omar Sharif passed away the other day. He was an Oscar-nominated actor who was best known for starring in two David Lean epics, Lawrence of Arabia in 1963, and then David Lean's follow-up, which was Dr. Zhivago, where he played the title role in 1965.
And Omar Sharif as Zhivago, a man of peace, forced into war.
Couple of years later, he made another big splash with Funny Girl opposite
Barbara Streisand. Yeah, and
very controversial casting back then, as I recall, since he's Egyptian.
Because he's an Arab.
That's right. Oh. And what I read, I also remember him being very funny in the Zucker Abrams Top Secret.
He wrecks the car and he comes in with his head sticking out of the smashed car. And
thinking it's fake dog doo-doo. It was very funny.
Yeah, he was an Oscar nominee, so We Are Movie Geeks likes to acknowledge when actors of note like him died. I remember he had a bridge column. I remember the St. Louis newspaper. I don't remember if it was the Globe Democrat or the Post-Dispatch would carry his bridge column every day. And I remember thinking how odd it was that this movie star, and he was still a big movie star back then, had this bridge column in the newspaper every day.
And the byline said, by Omar Sharif. Yeah. And supposedly he was one of the top 10 bridge players in the world.
He wrote books on playing bridge.
Oh, yeah, just amazing.
And spoke five languages. He was quite the Renaissance man.
Yeah, I think didn't he have a cameo in The Pink Panther Strikes Again?
Yeah, he was like a hitman or something.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, that was pretty terrific. Right? A silent cameo. I don't think he has any lines in it. But pretty amazing actor, I tell you. Interesting career.
And we saw some photos from the new Ghostbusters movie.
Yeah, we saw the vehicle first.
The vehicle looks the old vehicle.
Pack, and now
and their costumes, their uniforms.
Yeah, their jumpsuits, I guess. Yeah,
but it was the most.
They look like
the
prison uniforms, though.
In costume, finally. Yeah. So.
I like janitors to me, kind of. But, right. The movie I'm most excited about is the return to theaters of The Iron Giant.
Definitely.
Thank you. One of the, my favorite animated film of the last 25 years.
But you said that's only like a two-night event?
Yeah.
Is that a Fathom event or something?
It might be. I'm not sure. Yeah. Okay. But it's going to have new scenes, too.
Mm-hmm. When does that take place?
Late September. Yeah. And then October is the encore.
Okay. Well, we can talk about that more in upcoming episodes of We Are Movie Geeks, the podcast. But today's podcast is going to have to wrap up. We'll be back next week where we can review Ant-Man. We'll talk at length about Ant-Man, and Michelle and I will have seen Trainwreck by then, and we could talk about a few other things. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Michelle McHugh.
Jim Batts.
And we are signing off.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather, black leather.
Oh, naughty state. Hello, darling. Hey, 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 hey.
Black leather, rock, rock, rock. Black leather, ta, ta, ta. Black leather, hip, hip, hip.